Hello and welcome to another Marketing Meetup podcast. My name's James and thanks so much for tuning in. Today we've got a talk from a chap called Max Hoppe. He's spoken for us a couple of times before. He's a good friend of ours and an all-round good guy. He's the co-founder of an agency called Bind, a public speaker for the Keynote Club. He's one of the founders and the co-founders of the Keynote Club. He's an ultramarathon runner, an organiser of the Marketing Meetup in Manchester, and does lots of other amazing things. And you'll find out about some of his stories in this talk. He's not only going to explain during the presentation how to be a better public speaker and how that's really useful for your career, but he's also going to talk about confidence in general in speaking and how that can help in any situation. We can all be great at our individual areas of expertise, but if we can't communicate, then we're potentially shouting into the wind. So I think this talk is super useful for anybody that works in the marketing industry to get their ideas heard and land. Before we jump into the talk, I would normally give a shout out to a key sponsor. And this week it is Impression. But as I was reading through the notes that I had on Impression, Max very rudely interrupted me and said, actually, I've got something to say about Impression, who interestingly are a competitor. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop my intro here and I'm going to just jump straight into the point at which Max talks about Impression, because I think he does a better job than I do. And then we'll go on to the presentation and the Q&A at the end, which I think is all really useful stuff. So again, thanks for just being amazing and being part of this community. And I hope you enjoy it. They're detailed, they're committed, but above everything else, they're good human beings. So if you need a digital agency, go and check them out. They're impressiondigital.com.
Can I interrupt you? I know you weren't expecting this. Can
go
I interrupt
on.
You?
Yeah.
The Impression. So I run a digital agency that competes with Impression. And when you're a digital agency owner, you look at certain agencies, you hold them in high regard. And Impression, I mean, they don't know this, I've never said this publicly, I hold them in super high regard. And it's because I look at where talent goes. And one of the chaps that we hired really early in his career, a guy called Nick Hanley, has recently become their head of paid media. And to get Nick is a interesting human in that he is his values and morals and did all that stuff I love. And then his capability is off the chart. And then he also has low ego. That combo is rare. That's like hen's teeth. An Impression of getting that kind of talent in. So even though they compete, it pains me a bit to say, fabulous agency, and I keep an eye on them because I think they're doing great things. Sorry, James.
No, that's amazing. Do you know they've also opened in Manchester? So they're literally on your doorstep.
Nick's opened the office. So I know. Yeah.
That's great. Okay, well, that's the best sponsor read I think we've ever had. So thank you for that, Max. I should also mention we do have other partners as well. We have Braze, Storyblock, Klaviyo, Exclaimer, Cambridge Marketing College, and Redgate Software. They're all incredible partners. And what we'll do in the follow-up email is a link to all those people that we work with. And it would make their day if you just go and click on them and say thank you for the session. That's enough of me. You can see Max is itching to get started. Bring us some of the silliness and the magic, Max. I'm gonna hand over to you and your presentation.
Thanks, mate. I will say, by the way, when you said all those things that I do and how do you do it, I don't do it well. So maybe this is a talk for another day. You can only really do like one thing really well. And then you probably get an A star in one thing. And then you get a 2 C+. And then everything else gets like an E, like, or a U. So that's the trick. Like you can only really go after 3 things. And of those 3, at any one time, 1 can be going really well, I think.
Modest. I should have put modest on there as well.
Yeah, I did.
Presentation. Come on. People are waiting.
Okay, right. Let me share my screen. Okay, so this is today's talk. Dave Harland wrote the intro, by the way, wrote this. I texted him and said, I've got my talk title is crap. Can you make it good? And obviously Harland is very good at writing little one-liners. So thank you, Dave. So transform your marketing career by being a better public speaker. Thank you for the intro, James. This is the less interesting intro, the boring job intro. This is my career on a slide. So I started off life in Bolton selling washing machines online at AO.com. I then moved down to London to help other people sell things online at Google, which was just what an amazing part of my career. It was like university, but getting paid. It's fantastic. I then wanted to start a family and move back up north. And Google at the time, this was pre-COVID. So this was like hybrid working wasn't really a well-supported thing. And working out of Manchester wasn't something that they were up for letting me do at the time. So I left Google and I started a digital marketing agency called Bind, where I still help people sell things online. And I suppose the odd one out here is the Keynote Club, because I don't help people sell things online, but I suppose I help, it's not just me, we help marketers get better at public speaking and actually better at their jobs. So maybe it actually does indirectly help sell more things online. Okay, so there's the like career on a slide bit. This is the hypothesis that is driving today's presentation. I'll read it out. Most marketing problems aren't marketing problems. They're public speaking problems in disguise. Okay, I'll say it again. Most marketing problems aren't marketing problems. They're public speaking problems in disguise. Now, I really believe this. Seriously, I do. Now, and I want to get a read of the room. Before we get started, I just want to see how many of you believe this hypothesis. So, James, if I can ask you to do a little bit of admin, I suppose put in the chat a link to this little form. It's a little Google form, yes, no answer. I'll start a 30-second timer. Just give people time to fill it in. Hang on. Ready. Stopwatch. Ready. Okay, we're ready. We're going. 30 seconds on the clock. I'm actually going to flip back to the hypothesis so you can see it. So most marketing problems aren't marketing problems. Public speaking problems in disguise. Just give you 10 more seconds. I'm going to unshare and share again, because my presentation is hopefully going to update with the results if technology works. Okay, 5 seconds. Okay, let's see if this worked. Okay, cool, let's have a look. Did it work? How many of you believe? Okay, we've got 5 responses. Hang on, let me just exit. Let me just see if I can update the slide. Standby, update. Okay, yeah, we've got 82. Okay, sweet. Oh, that's cool. Let me share again. It's coming. Okay, cool. So I'm glad most people said no, because this presentation would be a waste of your time if you all said yes, because you wouldn't need to hear it. Interestingly, that so many people said yes, though. That's cool. That's bigger than I thought it would be. Now, today I'm going to try and convince some of the red people to turn blue. And I'm going to use 3 chapters to try and convince you, and then an epilogue, which is a posh word for summary. Okay, so chapter 1, the chicken problem. I'm then going to talk about a hero, today's hero, in chapter 2. And then I'm going to talk about a club in chapter 3. Okay, chapter 1. So what I didn't put on my career on a slide is that I actually had a job at Iceland Foods as head of digital for like 5 minutes. And I don't tell people, or it's certainly not on the public, and it's not on my LinkedIn or my CV, because I'm quite embarrassed about it. Now, when I joined, we were not selling enough frozen chicken. Not enough. And this was a huge problem, because frozen chicken is like one of the big categories for Iceland Foods. I mean, so big, I think I've got the numbers. I've made these up, by the way, but they're, because for 2 reasons, 1, to protect confidential information, but 2, I can't actually remember, but the number was in the millions. We had this weekly VAP target, online VAP sales, of over £1 million. Okay. And we were missing target. We were maybe 20% behind, and the delta was getting bigger each week. Before it's put in the chat, what on earth is, what's bloody VAP? Okay. What's VAP about? So VAP stands for value added poultry. Okay. You take a chicken, and you add some value. And in this case, the value was breadcrumbs and the deep fat frying process. I'm not convinced the chicken would call this stuff value, but that's another debate for another day. This is what it looks like on your supermarket shelf. This is value-added poultry. Bam. Okay. And I was told, I arrived, this is my problem. Okay. Now, after a couple of weeks, I was kind of scratching my head thinking, is this actually my problem? Because I was in charge of three things. I had the website, I had email marketing, and I was also in charge of PPC, paid search marketing. So these three, they were my three levers, I suppose. And very quickly, I pulled them all. Okay, the website is now, every little spot I had to shoehorn a chicken bloody pack shot in, it was there. You know, I was screaming chicken on the website. 1 week, I sent 250,000 chicken emails. That's not a joke. Like, that number is not, that's an under-exaggeration of the situation. 250,000 chicken emails. And my paid search ads were wholly talking about frozen chicken. So I had pulled all my levers, okay? And the sales were still not responding as the business expected. And because this was a serious situation, I dug in to the, you know, I went into the weeds and tried to find out what was going on. And it turns out some of the challenges we had were nothing to do with Marcoms, and they weren't in my control. For instance, the availability of the chicken was inconsistent throughout the UK. And at the time, this has probably changed, the online operation used to pick out of store. So literally local store availability would affect online availability in that area. So if you come on the website and you're looking for local chicken, you're looking for chicken and you're in Manchester and the local Manchester store sold out, it would be out of stock and you wouldn't be able to order it. The second thing I discovered is that the product reviews were below the average. And this was confirmed by the returns rates being higher on certain VAP SKUs. Like, people were bringing the VAP back to me. Well, not me, the store, their local store usually. And every time that happened, I think I lost a sale, you know. So I'm losing, I'm getting the VAPs coming back and my delta's getting wider. So I knew this stuff. I found it out. And I didn't do a good job of convincing and educating the business about the situation. So the business thinks it's a marketing problem. I find out it's not. And then I don't do enough to change the business's mind, which is why, like, this hypothesis I presented at the start may start to make some sense. However, sample size of one. Okay, that story was just one little story involving me. And I'm suggesting I put the word most in my hypothesis. So, okay, let's switch gear. I'm going to zoom forward now to Bind. And the beautiful thing about running a marketing agency, any marketing agency, is it's a privileged position in lots of ways, because you get to see into lots of businesses and, like, look under the bonnet and get a lot of confidential information. It's super great learning environment for that reason, actually. So I've now seen Bind's been going for 5.5 years, and it's allowed me to study marketing problems in over 100 businesses. Problems like these, I'll share some that may kind of resonate a bit. So how about this one? How can we grow by 50% and make the marketing twice as efficient at the same time? How do we do the double? Let's call that one the double. What about this one? How can we get brand investment to work, build the brand, using a ROAS KPI, using the same KPI we use for our email marketing? Like, how can we do that? We want to build the brand. We want to measure it on sales yesterday. How are we going to do that? And then this is a good old one. We want to launch all these things, all of them. We want to have done it yesterday. JFDI attitude, guys. And we want to obviously know what's going on. You know, we want to be able to distill the learnings from all these things and not drop the ball anywhere else. Okay, let's call that. I don't even know what to call that. But I see it all the time. Now, I believe marketers know the answers to lots of these problems. That's what we're going to call them, marketing problems. The answers are often things like this. That's literally impossible, mate. It's not possible. It's impossible. Or it might be, I know we're in the trading meeting right now and you want the answer in 30 seconds. However, we don't have any of the data. We then need to crunch, we need to work out how to capture the data, organize it, crunch it, pull the insight out, and then we will have the answer, which is going to take some time. Or, I mean, I use this one quite a lot, by the way. This is one of my favorites. I'm like, of course we can do all that stuff that, by the way, sounds ridiculous. We can do it. We can do 10 things all at once. However, I need to show you this list of stuff that we're already doing, and we need to stop doing most of it to free up the time to do all of these new 10 things. And by the way, if we do 10 at once, it is impossible to know what's happening because, like, the scientific method kind of says so. Like, we need a test and control, and then we change one thing, and then we see what happens, and then we rinse and repeat, you know? So it's not actually possible to see what's happening if we do it all at once, throw all the stuff at the wall at once. Now, obviously, I'm being slightly naughty, but that James said that in my intro. Like, I wouldn't say it like that. But I see marketers wrestling with these kind of problems that I started with. And they're not great at delivering the answers. As a collective, I don't think we're great as an industry at delivering strong arguments back. And if I think of me, you know, I'll speak for myself, in the chicken room, when I was getting the impossible marketing challenge, if I think back to what I was, like, why did I behave the way I did? I think firstly, I was often in these trading rooms with maybe 15 other executives, and I was the youngest in the room. And I was nervous. I was a bit intimidated, actually, that I'm in a room of 15 seasoned execs that have got more experience than me, and I found it difficult. Another thing that got in my head is that I'd see some of these other people in the room deliver really strong, robust, structured argument. And I used to think they were born with that skill. I'd be like, I wish I had that. I wish I'd been born with different ingredients. And I wasn't aware it was a thing you could learn. Number three, I'd done well in my career by being the positive, enthusiastic, you know, slightly like idiotic guy. Like, that was my persona, I suppose. And I felt that changing tack would maybe undo all that good work. And actually, I'd just be seen as being negative. And I think underpinning all of these kind of reasons, I was scared of losing my job. I'd landed this job. It was the biggest job I'd had so far, the most responsibility, definitely the most money. I remember my dad writing to me, by the way, when I got it, and he said, son, no Hopkinson has been paid that amount of money by somebody else, because we were a family that was quite entrepreneurial. So when we, you know, I'm sure dad did, I don't know, but he, he'd never been employed and had a big paycheck. So I've got this, so I'm feeling very proud, a bit impostery, and I was scared that I was going to lose it all. And none of these things, these are not marketing problems. None of them. Most marketing problems aren't marketing problems. Chapter two, the hidden hero. Eventually, at Iceland, I was forced very last minute to stand up on stage and talk about the chicken problem. And I will remember this, I don't know what to call it, incident for the rest of my life, like defining moment stuff. I stood up on stage. I had somebody else's deck. I'd been through the deck once. And I remember looking behind me at a chicken slide with a not very nice graph on it. I looked behind it. Looked at my audience. Didn't quite know what I was going to say. Look behind. Look back. Still wasn't sure what I was going to say. And then a little voice entered my head. I had no idea where it came from. And it said, make sure you remember to keep breathing. And of course, my breathing immediately gets labored. And then it stops altogether. And because I can't breathe, I can't speak. And what feels like 5 minutes goes by, but it's probably 30 seconds of silence with me looking in pain, probably on stage. And then I managed to kind of get out of my mouth somehow that I was having a panic attack. And in telling everyone I was having a panic attack, it weirdly kind of grounded me, I suppose, because I got it out. And I was able to finish the few slides that I had left. 2 weeks later, I handed my notice in at Iceland Foods. I gave very different reasons to the real reasons, which were probably obvious, but you know, I was embarrassed and ashamed. And I was then presented with one of these red pill, blue pill moments. Do I never speak publicly again? So I think I could have got another job that had no public speaking requirement in it. I think that was possible. So do I do that? But then it's going to rule out speaking in all parts of life. So no thanking people at birthday parties, no speaking at my daughter's wedding. You know, she's seven, but when she's older, not soon, by the way, at all. Like that can happen when she's 40, that's fine. But no speaking at my daughter's wedding. Or do I get back on the horse pretty damn quick and lean into this fearful thing? So I got to work and I started the work pretty quickly. And it began with joining Toastmasters, which is a really excellent, old, well-established public speaking charity. A bit American. You have to shake a lot of hands. They love the handshaking. But if you can get over the handshaking, then it is a great environment to start learning in a safe place how to speak. When my confidence kind of rebuilt a bit, I then decided to take the speaking out of Toastmasters, and I wrote to universities and I spoke at lots of unis as a guest lecturer. They're crying out for marketing speakers, by the way. You don't get paid, but the experience is a wonderful one. It's a scary one, but wonderful one. I then realized I needed to work on this thing, and I worked on my own resilience, general resilience, let's call it, and I started setting myself challenges like meditating 100 days in a row, which I did. I found that one quite hard, actually. It was the hardest one. And then eventually, I plucked up the courage and I'd done the work to let me go after bigger speaking opportunities like Brighton SEO in front of thousands of people on the main stage. Now, doing all that work taught me that mastering public speaking, when you do public speaking training, the two things you work on are personal readiness and speech readiness. Personal readiness, speech readiness. Let's tell you a little bit about both. So personal readiness is about this mind stuff, getting your mind. It's kind of like biohacking yourself because it's quite individual, I think. It's working out what are your triggers? What are the things that make your anxiety go up? What are the things that make your anxiety go down? And it's like eliminating those and doing more of these ones that make your anxiety decrease. And I've ended up with a checklist that I do before I do a talk. I've done it today. So four of the things on my checklist: no booze the night before. Like I realized that one pretty early. Like if my sleep's compromised, I'm kind of fucked. So booze knackers my sleep. Okay, work that one out. Exercise on the day. So probably at like 8:30 this morning, I went for a little walk on my own and I, 20 minutes, like not long at all. And I just was doing this mindful activity at a time where my anxiety maybe could be sneaking up on me. I then right before do a little headspace. So when me and James were doing our, we spoke 15 minutes before this webinar started. And I then said, right, I'm nipping to the loo and I need to do a little few minutes on my headspace. I always do that. And then the big one, dead obvious, is that I literally tally my reps. Like I've got to do a minimum 10 reps. Depends a little bit on the risk or the fear factor with the talk, but the more the fear, the more reps I'm making myself do. And then you've got speech readiness, which is getting your story whipped into shape. this starts with research. You can't wing it. Like, you've got to, it's a myth that these orators that we admire do it on the fly. They don't. Steve Jobs, the most famous product launches in the world, spent months getting into the finer detail of everything so that on the day he could show up relaxed. Structure is the thing that when I evaluate speeches now, I attack the most. It's the thing that most people make it hard for themselves by not thinking about structure. If you put a lovely little story arc into your story, everything just feels easier. Whereas if you're telling one thing after another, after another, after another, it's just hard work. So getting that structure right and playing with things like the stories we're told as children. You know, the killing a monster story is one of my favorites. I use that a lot when I'm pitching. You introduce a monster and then you introduce some characters and then the monster is killed. You know, that's probably the simplest, but you've got other things like Voyage and Return. You've got Damsel in Distress, like all these things stolen from kids' stories that actually you then start to spot in all of the great stories, films, books. I mean, the hero's journey is the classic. The hero's journey is in so many great, films and the Bible. I'm not a religious person, but there are hero's journey stories packed into the Bible. I do go to church though, which is maybe another talk for another day. Finally, flawless delivery. So this actually is linked to the tallies. If you do lots of tallies, you will deliver better. But then you learn some. There are some details that you learn, like lots of filler words, like ers, ums, sos, like lots of them make the quality of a speech drop. And then you learn some tricks around body language. Like, even though I'm on Zoom, I'm doing quite a lot of, I've even moved close to the camera a few times to make a point. And what else have I got on fillers? And maybe vocal variety. Like, I'm not trying to do a monotonous single tone the whole way through because it's boring and I'll lose your interest. So you learn all these things in the kind of speech readiness category of public speaking training. Now, all this stuff started because of this one, because of the panic attack. That's why I started doing all this. However, I soon realized this work was helping me do my day job in ways I didn't expect. It was helping me when I got hit with these ludicrous marketing problems. I was prepared. I was ready to handle the business appropriately. And if you think of the first principles at work here, what I'm actually talking about is getting the business to buy in to something, which then allows you to create marketing focus on the right things. And that's it. And that's why I've called this talk, or Dave Harlan's called this talk, I should say. But I gave him a working title. The working title was similar, it just didn't sound as good. But that's why I've said, transform your marketing career by being a better public speaker. This is career transformation stuff if you pull it off. And it's why I believe this. Most marketing problems aren't marketing problems. They're not. And if you do public speaking training, you'll solve a lot of them. Right. Scores on the doors. I've got another form for you to fill in. James at the ready. So let's see. This could go horribly wrong, by the way. It's the same question. I want to see if there's a change. If there's no change or we've gone backwards, James, we're going to have to edit this section out of the talk and write to YouTube. Because we can't have it. Like, our reps will go down. I'm going to also stop sharing. Stand by. Because I need to just update the deck. Okay, come on. Come on.
I can't wait to see if there's a little part of me that's hopeful that...
I know you are. Okay, well, hang on. What was the first score? Wait, let me just get that. I forgot what it was. Okay, we had, let me just write this down. We had 46% blue. 40, 45 because rounding. 45% blue.
Nicole just said, I almost voted no just to see Max's face. Good on you, Nicole.
Oh, can we put her in the waiting room, James? Okay, we're ready. I think we're there. Okay, so we started off 45% blue. Drum roll. 45% blue. Ready? Hey! 83% blue. Not quite doubling. 90% would have been a double. That's pretty good. I'm pleased with that. Oh, I mean, now I'm in a... Oh, wait, we should end there. We should end... right, chapter three. What a nice segue into chapter three. Okay, this Iceland thing that I've spoken about today, this has become the most important part of my career, for sure. I wouldn't change it. You know, I would have done straight after. I wouldn't now. Not a chance. Because it's led to the founding of the Keynote Club. It led to all that work I spoke about, you know, the Toastmasters, da-da-da-da. And then ultimately it's led to the founding of the Keynote Club, which we started a year and a half ago. Me, Becca Lamb, and Becky Wilson started it. And then it's gone on. You know, the community is built very organically and naturally. And now we all kind of co-own the thing, it feels like, anyway. So what on earth do we do at this public speaking club for marketers? Like, what actually happens? I'll start with this is the best analogy that I've come across, I think. So it's a bit like a public speaking gym. It's a place for you to come and practice regularly. And if you do that, your public speaking muscle will grow. And if you then stop doing it, the muscle will atrophy. I think that's an important point to make. You don't get good at this, then stop doing the work and keep the skill. It's a skill you have to continue to work at if you want to keep it. The three things we do during the meeting. So the logistical part is every 2 weeks, we meet on a Thursday on Zoom. So it's virtual, accessible from as long as you've got an internet connection. Every 2 weeks, Thursday at 12 o'clock for an hour. And we're very protective of that hour because we appreciate we're in the middle of work. So you've probably got a meeting, or you might have a meeting at 1 o'clock. So we make sure we finish on time every time. We do three things in a meeting. The first one is we play a little game where we split out into breakout rooms and we practice improv speaking, which sounds terrifying, but it's not really, because you're in a breakout room with five or six people. And you're given a topic like, you know, what book would you take to a desert island? Like easy kind of dinner party conversation. And you've just got a riff on it for a minute. And the reason it's good for you is it replicates that feeling of being put on the spot in a meeting or at work. So it really is like, it's like cold water exposure. You get better and more comfortable with it the more you do it. And it super translates beautifully into biz. Second thing we do is we'll have a little 5-minute theory slot from somebody sharing a piece of theory, which is usually interesting and practical. And then the third thing we do is we see a speech get evaluated. So someone speaks for 5 minutes, and then there's a real-time evaluation in front of everybody. And that shows you the kind of building blocks that make up a speech. And it kind of shows you that, you start learning why certain speeches feel good and certain speeches don't. You now can understand rather than just have the tummy feeling. And the beautiful thing as well is you see that it's a learned skill because you see people's progress. And this is the evaluation form. You see someone go from like a 2 out of 5 to a 5 out of 5 or a 4 out of 5 on a strand. And you think, this is a learned thing. It's not an innate gift people just have. You can build body language. You can improve body language by thinking about it and being more deliberate with it, that kind of thing. Okay. The gym analogy fails on one thing. And I think it's the feeling of the club. And James and I spoke about this yesterday. It doesn't feel scary. Some gyms you go in and you see all these big muscles. Or me anyway, I'm terrified. Like, I'm not going in there. But at the Keynote Club, it's not that vibe at all. Some people are very good speakers and some people aren't, but there isn't this macho vibe going on. It feels like the marketing meetup, which makes sense because we get a lot of people from the marketing meetup community to come without trying. It happens kind of naturally. Okay, and the final point I will make about the Keynote Club is that the gains are real. This is a message I received after our very first meeting, first session, year and a half ago. And I'll just read the first two lines because I love them. This is someone that spoke up, that has a real fear. She had a real, like, you know, feeling very nauseous, losing sleep, fear of public speaking. So this is what she said. I think last night might have been a turning point for me. I'm finding myself wondering this morning what I can do next. I love that so much. And it's because it speaks to, lots of us have a limiting belief in the public speaking kind of world. Like, we think it's not for us. And when we prove that actually that's not true, it makes us reevaluate other limiting beliefs we have, which can lead to an incredible amount of personal growth. And we've seen it outside of this one message. We've seen people change jobs, get promotions, win pitches, start businesses, do lots of things they found fearful, which happened because they conquered this little fear over here, and it translated to conquering fears in other parts of their life. So we'd love you to come. This is where to go, thekeynoteclub.com. Okay, let's summarize in a fancy way by using the word epilogue. I started off, so what have we learned today? We've learned why I don't put Iceland on my LinkedIn, why it's not on my CV. We've learned what value-added poultry is, what VAP is. And perhaps if you were going to screenshot a slide, this might be the money shot. This is the one when people are like, what were you doing with that hour? Like, well, I was learning the important, I was learning the gold. And you show them the screenshot, maybe, or maybe not. And then we've, on a more serious note, we've also explored this hypothesis. We looked at marketing problems that aren't really marketing problems. We looked at how public speaking training can solve a lot of them. And is this up to date? Yeah, amazing. We went from a 45% blue to an 85% blue. So some of you believe that hypothesis too now after today's little webinar. It's fantastic. So, and then I invited you all to come to the Keynote Club. Our next session is Thursday, the 30th of November at 12 noon. So I'll end with a thank you. I appreciated James letting me step in. I actually thought it was a fantastic opportunity. You know, my heart rate went up, but then I thought, what a great opportunity. So I really appreciate it. And it allowed me to reflect actually on some of the things that I've spoken about today, particularly Iceland, because I don't think it suddenly jarred with me that I'm saying this is the most important part of my career, yet I hide it from some of my, you know, online public like thing. Like, what's that about? So I've used today as a catalyst to make a change that has happened today. So if you now go to my LinkedIn as of today, there is a new job section. There's a new job in my job chronology. Head of Digital Iceland Foods, 3 months, Deeside Wales. Had a disaster publicly presenting and ended up handing in my notice because I was embarrassed about it. Left this experience off LinkedIn until recently, today's date, because I thought it looked bad, but then realized while talking at the marketing meetup that sharing it more openly might help us. There you go. Thanks.
Mate, that was brilliant. Thank you so much. The chat throughout, I'll send it to you afterwards, but the chat throughout is just, there's so many people loving A, your storytelling, but B, the sort of relatability to people's kind of pain points. And I think that's definitely one of the best presentations I've seen from you. So thanks very much for doing that.
It's really nice. Thank you.
We've got a bunch of open questions and we haven't got too long left. We've got about 15 minutes. So I'm not going to ask any of mine. I'm going to jump straight into some of the ones that come up because there's some really good ones. The first one is from an anonymous attendee who says, do you have any recommendations for stopping negative thoughts whilst in the middle of presenting / speaking to a group of people? I always find they pop up. And sometimes it's quite hard to quiet them.
I mean, they still happen. They happened to me today. I think learning about mindfulness and meditation, there was a book that was gifted to me called You Could Be Happy No Matter What that I found very powerful. I read this a long time ago, actually. And it used an analogy of, it told a story about in a restaurant, somebody knocks over a glass of water. You knock over a glass of water and a table next to you looks at you angrily And you're like, well, what the fuck? I just knocked over a glass of water. And it ruined your meal. And actually, they didn't even see you do it. They looked over for another reason. And I really, that stuck with me. You know, I remember it now. So negative, like these thoughts coming in, I think it's work. I don't think it stops. The most effective tools I've found to get them to happen less frequently are meditation, exercise. And then I've got a trick that when I see them, which you learn if you read about mindfulness. So when one comes in, I try and switch my brain perspective to be an observer of the thought instead of identifying with the thought. I suddenly go, ah, a negative thought has arrived. Oh, that's interesting. I'll watch what it does. And it, and then something usually then pulls me back into the moment. It happens. What's happened, by the way, is you're either thinking about the, if you're in the moment, you can't have them. So any kind of training that gets you to be more mindful is very helpful. And I think it takes ages. It's a load of work. This is months and years of work without an end date rather than a quick fix thing. It's a great question. And I still have it.
And I think, you know, a similar thing to negative thoughts is things that you weren't planning for that are distractions. A classic example is my dog next to me is snoring. And I'm thinking, is this ruining the audio? Like, is this like, but things just get thrown at you all the time when presenting. And, you know, from listening to all the things you've said over the years, is it's those reps that allow you to sort of plan for things that are going to go wrong. So it's good to see other people have got their dogs snoring next to them as well in the chat. So next question we've got from Alison said, and this is I don't know whether there is an answer, but I'd be interested myself, is how can you train yourself to stop saying things like and so many times? Is there a technique?
I still do it. I don't want to eradicate. Some speakers get rid of it completely. I don't, but that's maybe a different answer to the question. The first thing is to get an awareness that you do it. I wasn't aware until somebody tallied my errs and then compared them to another speaker. I was like, oh my God, I'm like four times the errs. And then you can get like, that's actually one that's easy to work on actually, if that's the only thing. The trick with speaking is to try and work on one thing at once, like anything really, like try and do one thing at once. So thinking about errs, first thing to think about, your first word, your first sentence, plan what that's going to be. Make sure it doesn't have or so in it. Okay. If you do that, you have now done something that 90% of speakers do not do. 90% of speakers have a shit word in that first line. So, okay, now let's move on to the next bit. Like, and you tack it a bit at a time, and then it becomes easier. One of the things you've got to get comfortable with is silence, which you realize we fill silence with these errs because it just feels safer. And you don't realize you're doing it, subconscious. But when you're aware of it, the first thing is awareness of it, awareness where you do it, and then working on it a bit of a time. And it's fairly straightforward, that one.
That's cool. Okay. So Tim asks, how do you approach smaller, more boring presentations, i.e. like a weekly company meeting where you might have 10 minutes to give a quick update to the rest of the business? Often hard to find genuinely interesting stories to tell.
So I think this is where you've got the biggest opportunity to actually create some amazing differentiation and change. I'll give you an example. Holiday handovers, most boring thing I have ever seen, usually. No one a fucking reason, because they're so boring. In my business, I think it was it Iwana who did it first? May not first, but Iwana certainly has done this. She creates this PowerPoint deck of a holiday handover and themes it and creates a, she makes people villains, I think. I think she's done that before or heroes, like maybe I'm Batman. Oh, I'm Batman. I'm now going to read the holiday handover because I'm Batman. And she's played with this document. And I think businesses are craving this. Like whenever our internal meetings get boring very quickly because you optimize, and then you're like, oh, it's boring. You then need to create a change. Now, look, the business culture's got to be open to it, but I think most of the time we don't take a brave stance because of the stuff in our own head rather than actually there being a risk from the business in doing it. So I'd say even if the information is standard, how you present it, mix it up. How do you tell a story with it? Tell people you're going to do this differently. We're going to just do it back to front today because just to snap, like, even stuff like that makes it more interesting and will differentiate you. So I think that maybe that, I don't know if there was helpful stuff in there, but there are ways to differentiate very boring meetings very simply. And actually, that's probably where you can create the biggest impact for you quickly, I think.
Yeah, and certainly I think as a marketer, you almost have a permission slip. You know, I think if it might be a bit a concern, perhaps if somebody from the accounts team comes along and they might just think that there's, you know, something's wrong kind of thing. But when it's the marketing team, you're maybe expecting something a bit more creative. So yeah, you can maybe have a bit of fun with that.
Even if you literally said, so say you've got good news and bad news in the update, which you probably typically do, you position it and say, today, instead of doing the normal update, we're going to talk about heroes and villains. I'm going to start off and talk about the heroes. These are the things that I think are the best things that have happened this week. We're then going to talk about the villains. And then we need to have a plan of what actions are we going to do to attack the villains. And that's where the discussion is. Like just that, framing it in it is more interesting than here are the three good things, here are the three bad things, let's have a discussion. Like it's not hard, actually.
Yeah, that's great. Michael's asked in the Q&A, what would your advice be for someone who wants to give public speaking a go, like, you know, the university thing that you suggested, but only has a few years of marketing experience, perhaps a bit of imposter syndrome, and not knowing exactly what to talk about?
I mean, the beautiful thing about being at that stage of your career is there is an audience that, like, actually a graduate audience would love to hear from you, because you've got, they're thinking about the next 2 years and what that means. I think you've got to think about what stories have you got a right to tell? And you've now got a right to tell story to graduate with zero experience thinking about the next two. A friend of mine, Patrick Quentin Smith, I'm mates with his brother, who, that's another story. But Patrick, he's Gen Z age. I don't know his age, but he's Gen Z. And he speaks to young Gen Zs that are want to get where he is. But he also speaks to old millennials and older, like me and James. James, you're probably not a millennial. You're probably the next one up.
Just about, mate. Just about.
I don't think you are, mate. We'll need to Google that. But so me and James, we're working out, how do we work with a Gen Z or with Gen Z people, both in our businesses and out, because we're slightly different. Our experiences that formed us are slightly different. So Patrick speaks to people like me about what we can do to empathize and work better with people like him. Like, and he's owned that and he's got less experience than me, but I want to hear that because I employ a lot of Gen Z people. So you've got to think about what have you got a right to own? I agree. There's no point in going in talking to CMOs about all of your marketing experience when you don't have any, or you've got 2 years. Like, that's not your wheelhouse. You got to think about
it. Yeah. And also, you know, I can see loads of people in the chat saying that they've already signed up for Keynote Club, which is great. But just starting something like that, where there's no kind of outcome, you don't have to deliver something. It's just a good place to practice, might be a good one to spark some ideas. Kelly asks, do you have any techniques for when your mind goes completely blank mid-talk?
I mean, it doesn't anymore, because I think that's work that happens before. Like, if you literally rep 100 times, I don't want to get... My head just went to... Okay, I'll say it because it's helpful. I often think learnings are in the extreme examples, by the way. So I'm going to an extreme example. So I had to speak at my dad's funeral. And like, my dad died unexpectedly. I was emotionally distraught, obviously. And I knew it was important for me to speak. And I was worried about that. So I practiced maybe 300 times, like not like days. I couldn't have gone blank. I made it impossible for blank to happen because I'd taken it to that extreme. So I don't believe that's a thing, or rather, I believe that's a thing when your preparation isn't high enough. And if you've not got to a place where it's impossible to go blank, you need to prepare more. And that may be an obscene amount of prep, but which it was for me with that example that I shared.
Yeah, no, that's really important. And I think something that I've sort of learned from like a bit of a theatre background is actually just making some sort of noise or sound, like some sort of words to come out of your mouth, is enough to help sort of bring you back on track Even if you go off on a tangent for a while, it buys you a bit of time to think about these things as you're talking, without just that really awkward silence. But yeah, I would definitely go with Max's one first. So yeah, we've got another question from anonymous attendee. How can you boost your confidence as a young marketer when facing an audience of people much older and experienced?
How can you boost your confidence when facing an audience? I mean, I think it's linked to the question a couple of questions back, that what's your right to speak? Like, you've got to first have that. And a lot of, one of the problems with my Iceland thing is I was speaking to a topic that I actually didn't feel that was my topic to own almost. So you've got to work out, I think it starts with, what have you got to tell them? If you don't have anything to tell them, you genuinely don't, which I don't believe, but if you don't, then I don't think you should be speaking. Like, I think you've got to, I think my arguing against myself, if you're training, so in my business, we get people to speak when they are not quite ready as training, but we've positioned it as that, I suppose. Like, so I don't know if I've answered that question well.
Yeah, no, I think it's probably been answered already in some of the previous questions. I thought Jessica's question was interesting though. She said, how much time did you spend preparing for this talk? We didn't actually give you that much time to prepare for it, to be fair, did we?
Honestly, not as much as I would have liked. So we agreed on Wednesday that I'd do this. I wrote it on Thursday. I probably wrote it for 5 hours, and I repped it only 5 times, and it's a long talk. And all of those reps started yesterday. I probably did it 7 times, actually. I did it 5 yesterday and twice this morning. So that's less than I would like with this. The thing that makes it easier is this topic is easy for me to speak to because it's me telling a story about me. So, you know, none of you can have the same, you don't have a right to tell that story because it's my life. Like, no one does. So that immediately makes it less anxiety inducing. If I was talking about like technical marketing that lots of you have got a point of view on, I think, Christ, I've got to really be prepared to be on my game. I don't need to do that with this topic as much. So not as much as I'd normally like to do.
Yeah, I think that ties into Lisa's question, which is about the unknown. Obviously, you could prep for this talk today, but prepping for the questions is a lot harder because there could have been a lot of questions about chicken in here. I'm surprised there aren't more. But she said, the worst part presenting for me is the unknown questions that come and the fear of not knowing the answer or even understanding the question. How do you handle questions as part of public speaking and prep for it?
I find questions, I don't prep for questions. I find them dead easy. I find them much easier than a prepared speech, which may be personal. Because generally when you're really in a Q&A, you get pulled into the moment because you're listening. If you're listening to the question, you're not thinking about the future or the past. And normally I won't put myself in a Q&A. I mean, I only put myself in Q&A scenarios where I've got a perspective that I'm going to give. If I don't know the answer, I'm also quite good at saying, I don't know. Like, and I'm now, the younger version of myself may have struggled with that. I'm pretty comfortable with that now. I don't know. I don't think I've given a good, you know, I'll even say I've done it on this. I don't think I've given a good answer here. And I'm pretty cool with that. I don't have all the answers. I'll give you the best I can.
Yeah, that's good.
So I don't find Q&A difficult. I find that a lot easier, actually. And I think most people, I speak to a lot of people about it, actually, and it's a common, people prefer the Q&A. It's why people prefer doing a panel than a speech, typically, because a panel you don't need to prepare for. And as long as it's a topic you know, you're fine.
Yeah. And I guess you don't have to think quite as much about your ers and ums and body language, and because it's not a polished presentation, it's thinking, people know you're thinking on the spot. So yeah. We've probably got time for one more. And I think this is a really good question. I'm not going to read the whole thing out, but Hattie is talking about starting to present during COVID, which is obviously all online, yeah. And is now struggling with the presenting in person. I know that in the Keynote Club, you talk about body language, but I always thought that was quite an interesting problem because in order for you to see my body language on Zoom, I've got to, the arms have got to come up, and you know, I've got to gesticulate a little bit more. Talk to some of those differences, and how do you think you know, how you can cope differently with different types of presentations?
I mean, it is different, and I think that you've got to do it. You got to think about you get good by practicing the thing in the environment that you're going to be in. So I'm better online than face-to-face at the moment because my practice is mostly online. And some things remain the same, some things remain different. Body language is a massive one that I feel quite awkward presenting in real life. I'm just not as well practiced at it. For some reason, my arms feel clunky. I saw Mark Ritson speak fairly recently where he was just walking along and back and forth the stage like we were walking to the pub together, hands in pockets. And it was so well done. I wrote to him afterwards and said, how did you get good at that? And he said, not surprised. He's like, decades of university lecturing. I'm doing that in a lecture theatre. So I think there are differences. And if you want to get good at one or the other or both, you've got to practice and get your reps doing both. I mean, let me just add one thing. There's some safety things you can do, like having a lectern makes it safer, having some things there. So if you want to ease into it, there are some things you can do.
Yeah.
We're out of time.
We are at time. Thank you so much, mate. That was absolutely wonderful. And thank you for everybody in the chat who's been so positive. And, you know, it's been a really great session. Next week, we've got Perna, who is principal consultant at LinkedIn and author of High Impact Content Marketing. So go and sign up for that one. She's going to talk about how you can make high impact content when your resources are stretched. And also, we've still got some in-person events going on before Christmas. So if you want to have some beer and pizza and mix with other marketers, we're still running those all over the country. But that just leaves me to say thank you very much. Thank you to all our partners and sponsors. And we'll see you all next week.
Here he is.
Cheers, guys.